Welcome to Booktopia on crime. So this month at Booktopia, we're celebrating crime books and how much we love them. And we thought we'd do a podcast all about crime, what we love about it. And today I'm sitting here with fellow Booktopian Sarah McDooling.
Hello.
And we have special guest Candace Fox, who's just out with her latest book, 50/50.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome. So, yeah, I thought maybe we'd just start with, what are you reading?
I'm reading 50/50, my kids too.
I heard it's good. It's awesome.
I am 100 pages in and very much enjoying it.
Yeah.
As are you, I think. We just got this book yesterday.
So we were starting last night. And but what are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading two. I listen to one and I read one. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, I can't actually read fiction on paper for some reason. I just can't get into it. So I'm doing audiobook. I'm doing the second Michael Connelly book. Mm-hmm. Because people yell at me because I haven't ever read any Michael Connelly. So
I haven't either, don't
worry. His latest one is the launch of a new character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So like if you finish this one and you're like, okay, I need a break from Bosch. Her name's Renee Ballard.
Yeah, strong female.
The book is called The Late Show. She's Harry-esque.
Okay, like, cool.
She's a detective and she's on the night shift because she filed like a sexual harassment case against one of her. I'm going all plotty now.
That's fine. That's fine. Explain
but
why
just
it's
to
great.
Set it up, I'll just set it up. So she kind of got relegated to the late shift as a kind of unofficial punishment for having done that. And so she works nights. And that means in the morning she has to turn all of her cases over to the day shift people and she never really gets to follow them through.
Mm.
Then, so the book sort of kicks off one night. She gets a couple of cases. She can't let go of any of them. So she starts working day and night.
Oh, man.
And she's pretty cool.
They relate to because she filed the sexual assault. And these ones are sexual crimes, aren't they?
One of them is like, not all of them are. I don't want to tell the whole story of the book.
Well, I'll check it out.
There's an assault charge and there's a murder. And
the true crime I'm reading is Anne Rule, and it's Small Sacrifices. It's a woman who kills her three kids for her boyfriend.
I know who Anne Rule is, but I've never actually read one of her books.
She's so good. I mean, The Stranger Beside Me about Ted Bundy was so fantastically amazing because she was like friends with him. And then she found out that and she was actually commissioned to write the book about these three missing women and had no idea that she was sitting next to the guy who'd done it.
Wait, hold the phone. I did not know this. So she was already a crime writer when
already a crime writer.
And
he'd
known
she,
that.
And
I
they
thought
were already
she became
friends.
One like afterwards because of knowing him.
No.
That's amazing.
And she was commissioned to write a book about these three missing girls. And she and Ted Bundy used to work the suicide hotlines together. And he used to walk her to her car and be like, you know, there's dangerous men out there. And she's like, oh, Ted, you're such a sweetie. And like,
didn't she want to set up her daughters with him?
Yeah,
I've heard this.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's so charming. Like a
so charming and handsome and lovely. And
when she saw the composite image of Ted Bundy on the news, because he murdered some women that he got from a beach and then he went back to the beach and got another woman and like
so
a bunch of people saw him and when Hannah Rule saw his composite image on the news she was like, looks a lot like Ted, is named Ted,
drives the same car,
surely not though, like surely
my
Ted can't
my Ted's
be my
sweeter.
Ted yeah so
that shows the level of charisma he must have had for someone to have all of the evidence they need to know.
He had women turning up at his trial who had dyed their hair and parted it the way because
that was his
type was brunettes with a part down the middle and hoop earrings, and they turned up to his trial and they were sitting in the front row making eyes at him.
Oh, you've got to be
kidding.
That's
like some Manson girl behavior.
Yeah, amazing.
So what is it then for you, because you guys have read a lot more true crime than I have.
I've listened to true crime more than I've got the opposite of you. So, Candace, you listen to fiction and read true crime.
Mm.
I'm the other way around.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, but I read mostly crime fiction.
Well, do you think it's the fact that it's real that makes it so fascinating? That even though crime fiction, you know, is based on things that we've heard and things that have happened, but it's kind of detached because it's fiction. But if it's true crime, does it just
I think in crime fiction you are usually safe because you know 9 times out of 10 there's going to be a good resolution and the bad guy will get caught and put away. And I like that.
Or killed.
But you like the thrill of the, the reality is that he may, you know, heaps of people will get killed. And
well, I think it's like you're naturally drawn to true crime if you read a lot of crime fiction because it's like...
This is what inspired it?
Yeah, just like that all of these things that happen in these books are real threats that could happen. It's not like dragons. Yeah. Like we don't have to worry about dragon eating. I don't think.
Like, you don't know. I think people like to feel scared. I think it feels good to feel scared. Mm. We like it and we're a little bit addicted to it. Yeah. And true crime's just it just scares you a little bit more than crime fiction deep down in your soul. And I'm fascinated by why people kill, because there are so many different types of killers and they all kill for a different reason. You know, you've got BTK going and knocking off whole families at 7 o'clock in the morning on his way to work, you know, and then you've got Aileen Wuornos killing truck drivers, you know, and stealing their car and taking their money and things like that, like doing it sort of like a scavenger. You know, so there's all different types of ways that people do it and reasons that they do it, you know. And I get a little bit obsessed sometimes, and I went online and I found the diaries and pages that Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold had left behind after the Columbine shooting.
Shit.
And so I'm scrolling through like 250.
Is this for research for 50/50?
No, this was just in my own interest. I just started researching Columbine, and then I dug deeper and I dug deeper and I dug deeper just to understand like why.
Mm.
And now I know stuff about them that, you know, people talk to me about Columbine and I'm like, you don't know as much about it as I do. It's just fascinating.
It reminds me of that bit in your book where they go, let's check the kid's computer to see if he's been looking up, you know, like if he's been looking up the word bomb, then why haven't you guys flagged him?
Yeah.
And he goes, if we did that for everyone, then, you know, Asia would go out of business.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd be one of those people that the weirdest search history.
I'm
and
definitely
it's really disturbing. Me too.
Are you?
But I get in Wikipedia, like, blue circle, like spirals where I just have you ever used Murderpedia?
Yes.
Yeah.
So of course I
you
have.
Just like you start and then you can't stop, and one thing leads to another thing, and like
And where are they now? What jail are they in now?
Yeah.
Can I see photos of them now? Yeah.
Are they dead? They tell me they're dead, so they're not a threat to me anymore. That kind of thing.
And if you're on Wikipedia, then very handily at the end of the article will be all of these similar, like,
yeah,
you like this, you're like this.
Yeah, it's terrible. And then you just accumulate all this random information. Yeah, like the last one I went on was I started with like a modern murder, like I can't even remember. It was a murder that I'd heard about on a podcast, and I ended up Googling it, and I ended, like, I don't know how I got here, but I ended with the real life guy who inspired the Bluebeard.
Yeah,
like there was some ancient serial killer who like murdered bazillions of people, and I was like, I had that moment where I was like, how did I get here?
The scary stuff on the internet, and you know, you can find like real audio of murders and real videos and that sort of stuff, and that's where I kind of stop. There's a podcast called Sword and Scale. And they play real 911 calls and things sometimes. And I'm like, oh, this is the limit. This is as deep as I go, you know. I'm happy to look at crime scene photos and things like that. But when you get
a bit too real.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good for my research because often there are details and things in there that you just wouldn't think of, you know, like this, like Dennis Rader, BTK, for example, like what did he eat for breakfast that day? And that going out to murder the family and why that family and this sort of thing. It's the little fascinating details. And you can see with a podcast like Serial that people get hung up on the little details of, you know, you go on the forums and people are like, hey, Min Lee, did she actually eat the chips that she bought? Because she bought some chips before she went missing. So people are like, where are the chips? And there are there are these whole like forums where people are like, what might have happened to the chips? You know. So people like to participate with true crime, I suppose.
It's true.
And I think people often, particularly with unsolved cases, really want answers.
Yeah.
Mm,
and it can consume people sometimes to the point where, like, I don't know if you, Did either of you watch the Keepers on?
Yes. Yeah.
So that sucked me in. That was hours of my life that I just yeah. was held hostage.
But you'll never get them back because you don't know who did it.
No, there's no answer there. Yeah. But there are those women who are researching it still are just obsessed, and they're gonna. Mm. It's like a life calling almost. They're just never gonna stop.
Have you watched The Jinx?
No. is that true crime or is it a?
It's true crime.
Oh,
you should watch it now. It's about the trial is on right now of the dude. So
okay.
just watch that, The Jinx. I have so many recommendations. Don't start me on my recommendations.
There's a whole other podcast just for Candace's recommendations. But then, so do you guys, when you read, whether it's true crime or fiction, do you prefer the crime to be solved or unsolved? Like, do you kind of get a bit of a kick out of them if they're not solved?
I always want them to be solved, but there is something fascinating about unsolved ones.
Because when you watch crime shows and they pretty much always get the bad guy, right? And then there's that very occasional episode where they maybe don't.
Mm.
And I always love those ones.
Oh, right.
Because you just think, where did they go? And it's almost like it's a flaw. Like, in the character, they didn't get the guy because you won't always get the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes, I mean, with the Leanne Holland murder, they pretty much know who it was. They just aren't going to charge him because he's already been to prison for it and he was released earlier. It's like, even if you did charge him now, you know, he wouldn't get that much more time. And
like, can he be double jeopardy thing? He can't be charged with the same crime.
Wait, yeah, well, he was acquitted of the first one, so he would get and he was released from prison after 16 years, so they're just not going to pursue charges. Right. So he'll never be labeled like a murderer. And he's already done the time. Like, it often, what I'm saying, I suppose, is it often gets really complicated. Have you seen a documentary called The Staircase?
No,
but I know the murders you're
Here's
talking about.
Here's another one, yeah.
Oh, this is a good one. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's a good murder.
And you know, recent things looking at the JonBenet murder have pretty much narrowed down what most likely happened, but you just can't prove it. And that's what frustrates me. I would like you to either solve it and for there to be prosecutions or deaths or whatever, or it's unsolved and they have no idea. It's that in between that really frustrates me.
Like, we all probably know who it was, but they'll never be brought to justice. Yeah. Although I don't know that about JonBenet. Like, there's the last one that I saw was the one where it kind of pointed to her brother, but I don't know if I believe that. Like,
what
I don't
do you
know.
Believe? What do you think happened?
I sort of think maybe the. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think sometimes I think the dad.
Yeah.
But then I think maybe it was a tragic sort of accident that the brother was to blame for, and then they elaborately covered it up in this the most bizarre way possible.
Yeah.
But it seems so far fetched. But also, there's no disputing that the evidence there is. It's going to be, they've got a fake ransom note. Just bizarre stuff. So whatever the explanation is going to be bizarre. So maybe it's...
Like the pineapple and milk bowl was out on the counter.
Did you see that? She had pineapple in her... Like, we're going so deep into
this right now. But you see, like, I mean, there's little rabbit holes where you go, well, had she eaten pineapple and milk? Who liked pineapple and milk? You know, was it on the counter? And how cold was it? And, you know, like, how long had it been out of the fridge? And then you can follow these little rabbit holes just forever and ever and ever, just spiraling around. And then sometimes you get nowhere.
This is the true crime rabbit hole. It sounds very dangerous and very deep and dark.
Yeah.
You can't, it's hard to pull yourself out of it.
Do you reckon you fall as deep when it's just fiction?
I enjoy the fiction in a way that it's totally different to... With true crime, I'm fascinated, and like, you can get into this sort of trap, especially with ones like the JonBenet murder, where it's technically unsolved, and you, like, part of your brain actually thinks you might be able to figure it out, right?
So I will be the one to solve this.
It'll
we'll
be
go to the police, and I'll be famous.
And finally, I'll be on Ellen.
Yeah, it's the dream to be on Ellen.
As unlikely as it is, and as much as you know that you won't, there's the possibility that sort of drives you. I get fascinated by true crime, and I don't know if fascinated is the right word for my crime fiction reading. I just love it. Like, I just get a kick out of it.
For me, the crime fiction is all about the character.
Yeah.
The whoever is solving the crime. It doesn't necessarily mean so much to me what the crime is. Like, with the Michael Connelly ones, I've really enjoyed the fact that Harry Bosch is such a jerk.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody's, you know, everybody's going around and they're like, oh man, you know, go away, Bosch. We don't need you, Bosch, and all this. And he's like, I want this, I want that. And so now that I've started reading the second one, he's gone at people's throats and things and demanding his way and all that. And I'm like, oh, Harry, you're such a jerk. I love you, you know?
So, do you think
he's a really lovable character. And it does hinge a lot on that. Like, we spoke briefly about Lee Child.
Yeah.
And we were speaking before the podcast, and so now I've totally lost track of what we said in the podcast and out of the podcast. But
I don't even remember.
We today either recorded or not spoke about
I think we were Michael talking about Robotham. Sex scenes.
Yeah, right. So, like, those are all authors for me that I think have really great characters.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favourites, and what do you think makes a really good lead character, crime solver, let's call them?
My husband said to me, when I was talking to him about the Bennett Archer series, where the person you hang around with most is Frank, and my husband was saying, think of it like a road trip. You've got to be in the car with this person for the entire road trip, you know. So that you've got, even if they're a jerk or they're crazy, or
as long as they're entertaining.
It's a long car trip.
It's a long car trip, and you just don't want to be suffering the whole time. Mm. So for me, there's got to be a little bit of humor.
Okay.
There has to be, and there's not, you know, there's not so much of that in the Bosch ones I'm reading right now. But for me, I can't write a book without there being a few jokes in there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When I was writing with James Patterson, Never Never, when I was writing my bits, I thought almost swearing is going to get cut out. Like, he'll cut out this swearing, that swearing, but I'll put it in and then he'll cut it out. But mostly he cut out my jokes. He was like, my books just aren't this funny, you know, and it's going to be like a real...
Save it all for your books, you know.
Yeah,
save it all of the jokes.
All of the jokes, yeah. So... a lead character has to be funny and they have to be resilient. I get a little bit bogged down when a crime fiction protagonist is so crushed by the actual crime that they're having a major personal crisis about it. I'm like, come on, like, pick yourself
Focus.
Up and solve this thing. Like, don't be...
This is your job.
Drinking and lying around and being upset about it.
So do you think that that's... If you think about the crime fiction that's all, like, timeless, you know, like Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that's one of the main reasons? Is because the characters that they've created, like Sherlock Holmes, are just, people love them, and that's what it makes them, because, you know, they've been made again and again and again.
Yeah.
Like, there's the new Agatha Christie movie coming out, there's the new Sherlock Holmes.
But this is where we get into that really interesting distinction. We had Jeffrey Deaver here last week.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Was it last week? Is it only a week ago?
I think it was, and I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
So this is something, because we talk about Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie, who I love, and I've read over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very different, like, levels of crime fiction where you have
mystery.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Deaver just described it in the best, most succinct way possible, which is that you've got mysteries and you've got thrillers, and they're both crime.
Mm.
But mysteries are all about what has happened, and you've got to figure it out, and thrillers are all about what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's very true of Agatha Christie in particular.
It's a mystery
and you can put it down. There's not that impetus to keep reading. Like, you want to know who did it.
Mm.
And I love reading them. I love her characters and stuff. I love Dorothy L. Sayers.
Mm.
I love, like, the Georgette Heyer mysteries. I love all of those. Neo Marsh, like, love them.
Mm.
But, and I hope I said that correctly. The Neo, because you'd spell N-G-A-I-O and I never say it right.
Yeah,
and I bet you I've said it wrong. But anyway.
Yeah.
The point is, I love them, but it's not like they're quite comfortable, cozy reads.
Mm.
And a book like 50-50 or a book by any of the authors that we've been mentioning is really like a thriller, and there's this impetus to keep going and going and going.
Yeah.
I've just talked for a long time, haven't I?
No, you haven't. Not at all.
I agree with what you're saying, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an author called L.J. Owen, or it might be L.M. Owen. I'm being so rude by not knowing. But she writes cozies, but the crime happened like 3,000 years ago. It's like an archaeologist who's solving it.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I guess Christie did one of those. Death comes at the end.
Oh, yeah. That's impressive. It's impressive too, because, like, you know, the evidence is so old, but how do you solve it if no one is alive?
There's a really famous one as well that I've never read that I've always meant to read by Josephine Tay called Daughter of Time. It's in my... I almost bought it the other day. It's one of those ones where I'm like, I know I'm going to read it eventually. I haven't read it yet. But he like tries to solve, and I think possibly does solve, the crime of, you know, the two princes in the tower that were murdered possibly by Richard II.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So he decides that he's going to solve that. Yeah. And so obviously all of the clues are like way in the past.
It's funny because so many people have been like, I've solved the Jack the Ripper thing. I know who he was. This is who he was. Sure. And they write whole books about it. And you never know.
That's why people love it and they do it. Yeah. Because you could never know. And you almost don't want to know in a way.
I definitely would love to know. If there was a way to time travel and figure it out,
I would love to know.
Definitively, I would love to know. But I just don't think at this stage...
It's too hard. Yeah. It's been too long. And
You would have to find some, like, indisputable proof.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like a confession letter.
Authenticated diary.
Yeah, I think there was, like, a diary or a letter or something.
He wrote letters.
Somebody had. Yeah.
But you don't even know if it was actually Jack the Ripper. Yeah.
But then, so if... you know, on the opposite end of, you know, trying to solve crimes that are 3,000 years old, what do you think then happens with, you know, what do you think's changed with technology and time? Like, what has changed with crime solving? What kind of elements have been added to books now that, we have DNA and forensics, and because that's kind of just become a really great aspect that we wouldn't have had even 50 years ago. There was way, way less.
Yeah,
you have a whole genre of forensic mysteries and forensic crime novels, like the Kathy Reich's books that rely so heavily on forensics.
that's the word. Yeah.
But yeah, like that evidence that you can only get through like fancy technology.
Yeah, and I mean, I went to this conference called Crime Scene. It happens every couple of years over in Western Australia, and they had me there talking about the crime fiction thing, but they had all sorts of people, and one of them was a fingerprint expert, and one of them was a DNA guy, and all this sort of stuff, and they were talking about how that affected the technology and all that. They think, well, he must have left DNA, and how sometimes it's just, you know, they just couldn't find it. Maybe it was there, but they couldn't find the DNA or something like that. They had amazing stories. One guy was talking about how they solved a crime by getting the blood out of a mosquito, because the mosquito had bitten the killer. And then
that's so obscure.
It's so obscure, and like it's so unbelievable. But it actually, you can Google it. You can Google it. So they found a car with like a body in it, and they saw a mosquito flying around in the car. And they trapped it and they took the blood out.
Clever to think that. Not to be like, oh, go away, mosquito. Oh, no, let's catch it.
Yeah, let's catch it and then see if it's bitten the killer. Amazing. I know. And at the end, though, like, this is me going on about how funny I am. At the end, when it was question time, I was like, was the mosquito okay?
Were any mosquitoes harmed in this case?
Did you make sure you put it under with a little, tiny little oxygen mask?
Oh,
no, it wasn't okay.
It didn't survive.
No, I remember this scene in a show I like once, where it was Once Upon a Time, and there's just this, which isn't crime or anything, but there's this scene where the main character, she finds people, you know, she's a bail bonds person kind of thing, and she uses all the technology to track the people down.
Yeah.
But then she's with this local sheriff who says, you know, oh, I don't do any of this stuff. I'm more of a pound the pavement, knock on doors kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so there's those two extremes of like, which way do you prefer? Do you really like reading one where they're really smart and they solve it by catching a mosquito, or do you prefer that, you know, they're running... and pounding the pavement, knocking on the doors.
I like pounding the pavement, knocking on the doors.
Because that's
talking to the people.
Yeah. I like both. To me, it depends on the character.
It does.
So, like, I love a character like Harry, who's out there, beating people up and being
amazing. Pound the pavement.
And like, and I'm in the middle of this book, so at the moment, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
But you know, there are some really cerebral crime solvers,
like Sherlock.
Yeah, or like you know Jeffrey Deavers, Lincoln Ryan. He's like quadriplegic. Yes.
It's been a long time, but weren't there like oyster shells powders in his first one? The bone collector.
Helped him isolate.
Oh no!
That's not a huge spot. You'll be fine. is, you know, I like that. I all like Sherlock Holmes where it's all like sort of mental. It depends on the character, and if the character is interesting and engaging, yeah, and like, mm-hmm, like you said, I love if they're funny or have a sense of humor, yeah, even if it's dry or, you know, or not. Sarcastic, quippy one-liners will always win me over.
Yeah,
and I think you can have those regardless of whether you're an action man or a more of a thinker in your crime solving.
Yeah,
yeah. So okay, both.
Well, I think we should end with a question.
Okay.
Is that if you could have dinner with any fictional, like maybe like a fictional,
so serial killer?
Oh, I was going to say no. That is the broad question. You could have dinner with anyone from the crime world. So you could have dinner with a serial killer, or you know, a character from a book that you love, like the detective or something. Who would it be? Like, would you have dinner with Ted Bundy? I don't know. I mean,
you might not survive that.
assuming you would survive, right. you've got some chaperones, let's say. And
I would fully have dinner with Ted Bundy.
We've got you on record saying
for
you
sure
could take Ted Bundy.
Oh, yeah. I would. I would just want to talk to him.
He's your favourite serial killer?
Yes, because I just find him so incredibly, incredibly diverse across all of his personality. You know, this amazing, charming, wonderful, funny man that so many people loved, who was at the same time, you know, taking women into the forest and killing them and going back and visiting their corpses 12 months later and putting makeup on them and doing things to their bodies. You know, like...
Yes, we're not condoning this, everyone.
I just would want to say to him, like, which half of you is, like... How can you be this person and that person at the same time? And you know what? I know what he would say is, he would say, "It's not my fault," and you know, I was made this way. And he would fully take no responsibility because he's a psychopath, and they don't take responsibility. You know, but it would just, I think
that's why it's
really
interesting, because we can't understand that. You know,
yeah,
those of us who aren't psychopaths, you know, to understand a little bit of why they do what they do.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Sarah? Who
would
you...
That's an impossible question.
I know. But who's someone that you would want, just anyone that you'd really want to...
First of all...
Could it be someone who's dead? Like a victim?
Yes,
like,
yes.
I would, and then I would know who he was.
I was thinking like Haemin Lee. Like, you'd go, who killed you? God, yeah. Tell me, please.
That would be interesting.
Oh, no, that's a terrible question.
And then they'd have to,
like,
go back
actually,
to being
I
dead.
Just felt really sad because my brain went so straight. You could have dinner with Jean Renee. And then see, this is the thing with true crime, is that there's really two sides to it. That you can get so caught up in how fascinating it is that you sometimes
forget that people
then
have
it
died.
Just hits you. Hits you at moments how sad and tragic it is, and the victims suddenly
But that's
grab
the
you.
Point. Like, that's the triangle of crime and why it's so wonderful, is if you have an amazing protagonist who you love and you want them to solve the crime, and you have a vile criminal who you just want to see caught and maybe, you know, understood for why they did it, and then you have a victim who you really feel sad about what's happened to them, like, you have that perfect triangle, that's when you end up with like an amazing crime story. You know, so that's what you aim for all the time. And there's like setting and technology.
Yeah,
and
those
all
are
that,
the three.
Those are the three.
Three pillars that really.
And it's almost like medicine, really, a good crime novel, because it can really make you feel like there's justice and the good people will win and the bad people will pay and everything
crime
will
fiction
be right.
You're talking about not true crime.
Something no, not true crime. True crime.
Yeah, fiction.
Yeah, it's like crime fiction is the medicine.
It makes up for
the antidote
that
to true
horrible
crime.
True crime that you
yeah.
get.
Yeah.
I don't actually think that I could have a level of interest in crime fiction that I do and not offset it with some... Sorry. I'm really messing this up.
You mean offset it with the crime fiction?
The level of
true
crime obsession that I have, and not offset it with crime fiction to make me feel better.
Because there would be a lot of true crime stories out there that end happily, that, you know, that we just maybe not as famous because it's the true crime ones, like Jack the Ripper, How They Got Away.
I'm going to start collecting the ones that have good endings.
Yeah.
Like the ones where the victims actually got away and stuff.
There are certain shows on like Foxtel where you know it's only on there because the person got away.
And
I
they're
survived.
Recording it.
I survived. Yeah,
see,
oh
that's good. But it's still thrilling because you're like, how did they survive? How did they get out of it?
Yeah,
that's
some of the stuff those people survived is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great show. I'm going to watch that again.
Lots of recommendations. Well, I think that was a great chat. about crime. I think we're all very crime obsessed here.
We could go on.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But we're not allowed.
We're not allowed. We should stop. But
get back to work.
That was great. So thanks, guys. Thank you for being our special guest, Candace.
No problem. I loved it. Thank you.
And thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah.
I love it.
No, you're always great to have on a podcast.
Thank you, Bronwyn, for hosting.
Anytime.
Now that loving is done.
Yep. Thanks for joining us, everyone. You can join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. where we'll be discussing what's hot in the book world.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.